Manner of the certificates of Nicholas Cilento, State Board of Examiners. May we please have appearances of counsel.
The court may excuse the court and appearance on behalf of Petitioner Nicholas Cilento.
Good morning, counsel, and welcome. Mr. Critch, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. I'd ask to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
That's fine.
Thank you. This case asks the question of whether a state agency can issue a final administrative decision that compels a certain action to take place, and then, based upon the exact same evidentiary record, issue a second final agency decision which cancels out that former result. For all the reasons set forth in our briefs, and as we'll argue here today, the answer should be no, and this court should therefore reverse the appellate division. The petitioner, Nicholas Cilento, was a well-regarded special education teacher in the Woodbridge School District. He had an issue with alcohol. He made a mistake at school. He got caught. He took responsibility. He got help. He got better. He went back to being something that our state needs very, very much, a highly effective special education teacher. He was able to go back to that position because after a multi-day tenure hearing, a highly credentialed, experienced arbitrator, statutorily appointed by the Commissioner of Education, found that Mr. Cilento was worthy to be back in a school classroom. He did that. He went back to school. He kept working. He did a great job. Thereafter, based on the same record, the same decision, the decision of the arbitrator, the licensing authority of the Department of Education, the State Board of Examiners, suspended his teaching certificates. You can't be a teacher if you don't have a certificate, and therefore, by operation of law, the examiner's order of suspension terminated his tenured teaching position, thereby erasing and negating the final administrative decision of the arbitrator, which said he should keep his job. It is that conflict and inconsistency which brings us here today. There are a few points that I would like to highlight to the court here. First and foremost, to address the fear that the state has intimated in its papers, we are not trying to argue or stop the examiners from doing their job. The State Board of Examiners fundamentally serves three roles. Investigative. They investigate allegations of teacher misconduct. They have the authority to do that. Prosecutorial. They present cases, prosecute orders to show cause before the Office of Administrative Law. And finally, adjudicative. They have review authority within the Department of Education to decide and issue penalties against teaching certificates. This case only goes to the adjudicative function of the examiners and the Commissioner of Education. And we are only here arguing that the examiners and commissioner cannot issue a contrary decision based upon the same exact underlying evidentiary record. So there are a number of situations where the examiners might still very well take action after a tenure case has been heard and decided and the teacher has kept their job. For example, a Board of Education in prosecuting a tenure case might fail to bring in a critical witness and therefore fail to have a teacher removed at the end of the day. Nothing in our argument would stop the examiners from issuing an order to show cause, prosecuting the order against the teacher, bringing in that witness, adducing and proving new facts at a hearing, and then upon that supplemental record, justifiably suspending a teacher's certificate. Likewise, a Board of Education might fail to charge an act of conduct unbecoming when it brings a tenure case. Nothing would stop the examiners from doing their own investigation, from adducing facts regarding that misconduct, proving it at a hearing, and imposing a penalty on that basis. If there are additional material facts that the examiners can develop, which suggest a greater penalty is warranted, they can do that. All they cannot do again is reach a different result based on the same record. There's been, the next thing I'd like to talk about is the nature of the arbitral decision, because there's been a dispute, obviously, between us and the state as to whether that is a final agency decision. And I think it's important to point out that the entirety of the arbitral process with respect to TCHNJ is mandated by statute and subject to the oversight of the agency until the decision is issued. The only thing that changed when the TCHNJ Act was enacted was who makes the decision. It used to be administrative law judges, then the commissioner, now it's arbitrators. And the point of that was not to change the process, but simply to speed it up. And this court noted in the matter of San Juan v. School District of West New York, 256 NJ 369, though, that the TCHNJ amendments to the THEL changed the entity that makes the final determination in the case. It did not make changes as to what could be or should be the final determination. The impetus, of course, is that it's the same proceeding with a different decision maker. It's also important to note that the entire process, again, is controlled by statute, and it's 18A 6-17.1. The arbitrators have to be highly credentialed. They are appointed to cases by the commissioner. The parties have no say. They are highly trained, specifically trained on issues of conduct unbecoming and the school law. And when they are making their decisions, they are deciding a subject matter that is exclusively the prerogative of the agency, the Department of Education, and that subject matter is conduct unbecoming a teacher. They have been not only statutorily authorized to make a decision in that subject matter area, they are required to have the training that empowers them to do that. Frankly, training that even our administrative law judges in that specific area aren't required to have.
So you pointed out that the decision maker is different, that it used to be that the ALJ and the commissioner would make the decision, and now the arbitrator is making the decision. How can it be a final agency action if no one in the agency is making the decision?
Your Honor, it's our position that the arbitrator, by way of their appointment by the agency, is the agency decision maker.
Because by statute, the commissioner has to create this pool of arbitrators. That makes the arbitrators part of the Department of Education?
For purposes of a tenure case, yes, they are. After the arbitrator makes a decision, and again, that is all subject to the jurisdiction of the agency till it's made. There's no further...
But for example, if the commissioner were to disagree with the decision of the arbitrator, there's nothing the commissioner could do about it, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
And the statute specifically provides that there is no review by the commissioner, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you say that the arbitration is subject to the jurisdiction of the commissioner. What do you mean by that? Because pursuant to the statute, the arbitration and the arbitrator has to follow the rules of the American Arbitration Association. Doesn't seem as though they're following the rules and regulations of the Department of Education. So what do you mean by the arbitration is subject to the jurisdiction of the Department of Education during the pendency of the arbitration proceedings?
Certainly, Your Honor. The commissioner has the authority to remove an arbitrator from an arbitration if they are not following the timelines that are established by the statute, 18A 6-17.1. And I think it's important to note that all of the rules and standards that the arbitrator has to apply are dictated by the education law statutes. The subject matter of the arbitration is not decided by the parties. It's conduct unbecoming under the tenure laws. The arbitrators have to have the training to make decisions regarding conduct unbecoming. The fact that they can follow the AAA arbitration standards isn't something they can choose to do or not do. It is mandated by the school law statutes. So the legislature established this process even though we have an arbitrator making a decision, everything the arbitrator is doing falls under the jurisdiction of the Department of Education by and through the statutes and that have been enacted for that purpose.
But specifically, 6-17.1e says, the arbitrator's decision is final and binding and may not be appealable to the commissioner or state board of education. Is that accurate?
Yes, Your Honor, okay, absolutely.
So the jurisdiction does not extend to them reviewing the decision of the arbitrator. So
yes, Your Honor.
How is that mean? How do you then square that with saying that they're subject to the jurisdiction of the commissioner?
The commissioner has the authority to remove the arbitrator until such time as an award has been issued. And because the issuance of the award is the final step in the process before any judicial review is available, and because the legislature has designated the arbitrator to make the final decisions in these statutorily required administrative cases, the arbitration award, therefore, is the final administrative decision.
When you say, sorry, that the commissioner has the authority to remove the arbitrator at any point, can the commissioner remove the arbitrator because he or she does not like the substance of the arbitrator's decision? I didn't see that anywhere in the statute.
The statute only references removal for failure to follow the timelines.
So no substantive jurisdiction over the proceeding.
The arbitrator is not, I would agree with that, Your Honor.
And the arbitrator's decision is final, subject to judicial review under the New Jersey Arbitration Act, which is wholly different than what happens before the Board of Bar Examiners.
I would agree with that as well. It's not reviewed directly by the appellate division.
Which is usually where final agency decisions are appealed.
Of course, Your Honor. This is an unusual and I would submit really unprecedented procedure that was enacted by TeachNJ with respect to these arbitrations.
Didn't TeachNJ purposely enact this to have arbitration be an alternative to the agency procedure? And now instead of this agency procedure, which leads to a final agency action, which the commissioner has control over, there is this separate arbitration process?
I would submit that the answer to that is no, Your Honor. It did not replace the administrative procedure. It simply delineated a different type of administrative procedure. And the
what other type of administrative procedure is arbitration? Usually arbitration is seen as an alternative to litigation or an alternative to a judicial or agency decision-making process. So where do you have the... is there any other support for the idea that an arbitration can be an administrative proceeding?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of any other employee discipline or other procedure in the state that functions the same way that TeachNJ does. And some of the critical differences are the fact, again, that the parties have no control over the selection of the arbitrator. The arbitrator is not being appointed to hear or decide a contractual dispute. The parties don't have the authority to hire or fire the arbitrator. The arbitrator doesn't have the authority to frame the issue as they would in a traditional labor arbitration matter. Rather, every aspect of the case is compelled by statute. The only difference is that our legislature said instead of having the commissioner review and the commissioner issue the final decision, we're going to have the arbitrator do it.
How do you respond to the board's argument that we're dealing with two distinct processes that serve different purposes? The board is acting statewide in removing a teacher from all classrooms in the state, and tenure only deals with a particular school.
Certainly. Judge, I disagree, Your Honor. I disagree that they serve different purposes. Ultimately, the arbitrator and the examiners have the same fundamental duty, which is to ensure that a teacher who appears before them is fit to be in the classroom.
Does the arbitrator have the authority in a tenure arbitration to suspend a certificate?
No, Your Honor.
So you've argued to us in your opening statement that the adjudicative function of the examiner should be removed altogether. Given the timeline, arbitration will ordinarily come first, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So is there any language in the statute or in the regulation that suggests the arbitrator can prevent the board from acting?
There is not, Your Honor. And to be clear, we are not making that argument.
And given the timeline, it means the board would, in effect, be barred from acting if we were to adopt your proposal. Is that
fair? They would not, Your Honor, and I can explain why.
Could they, under what circumstances, after a 10-year arbitration proceeding has taken place, could they suspend a certificate?
Certainly. There are a number of examples. There can be a 10-year arbitration where the teacher is removed. If you're bad enough to get fired, you may also be bad enough to lose your certificate. That's one example. They can act if there is a settlement in a 10-year case. So there's been no determination of whether or not the teacher is actually fit to remain in a school. Third, as they can, if there is a 10-year ward, as was here, where the teacher is not removed, the examiners still have the ability to investigate, plead and prove additional material facts that would justify some penalty beyond that imposed by the Department of Education's statutory decision maker, the arbitrator.
But not the suspension of a certificate? Under the hypothetical you just gave.
Certainly. No, if in this case,
this case, your argument would extend and in effect bar the board from acting after the 10-year arbitration proceeding.
My argument is that the examiners could not summarily impose a penalty beyond of suspension, which again would which terminated Mr. Salento from his employment based on the same record. Now, for example,
so a determination with respect to the arbitration process, the 10-year process, would in effect have, in reality, it would affect any potential outcome with respect to the certification under the facts that you've posited here.
It may affect the outcome in some cases, but it does not bar the examiners from undertaking their own prosecution, proving additional facts, and then imposing a more significant penalty, such as a suspension, based upon not only any conduct unbecoming found in a 10-year case, but on the additional conduct unbecoming that they have independently pled and proven. If, for example, the examiners had accused Mr. Salento of not only taking a sip of alcohol at work, but also engaging in the bullying of a student, and they issued an order to show cause, they proved that on top of the drinking, there'd been an incident of bullying, that the combination justified a suspension, we would not be here today.
So isn't the logical extension of your argument that if the arbitrator, the 10-year arbitrator in this case, had reached a decision of termination, that the Board of Examiners would have to delicense?
No, I don't believe they would have to
But you were the one that said that they, quote, they can't reach a different result based upon the same record.
Correct, Your Honor.
By saying no, are you saying that they are two different results?
What I am saying is that there can be conduct that is bad enough that costs you your job that is not bad enough that costs you your license. You could have a teacher, for example, who has an unprofessional interaction with her principal, but is great with students. It might justify, per an arbitrator, termination from tenure, but not be so serious as to warrant the suspension or delicensure of that teacher.
You seem to be arguing they can impose a greater penalty on the same record. They could impose a lesser or a different penalty since the first case has nothing to do with the certificate to begin with, correct?
Your Honor, as a practical matter, the only authority that the examiners have is to suspend or revoke a certificate. And that is the only action that they ever take, or a dismissal if an order to show cause isn't proven. The problem is that any time you lose a certificate, even if it's suspended, as a matter of law, you can no longer hold the tenured teaching position.
So then what you're actually arguing is, let's say the tenure decision is that the person is suspended for 1 year. And then the examiners were to suspend the teaching certificate for 1 year. Even though that might seem like the same penalty, you are actually saying that would not be permitted because the way that this works in function is the person would be permanently removed from tenure. And so it wouldn't be the same as a 1 year suspension from their tenured position. It would be some sort of greater penalty, correct?
I would agree with that, but I again want to emphasize that we are the very limited point we are making is that the examiners cannot take disparate action based on the exact same record.
Well, it sounds like you're arguing that the commissioner is bound by the arbitrator's decision based on the same facts. And the only time the commissioner can suspend or revoke teaching certificates is if there are some additional facts or there's an additional witness that the that the arbitrator didn't consider. So it sounds like you're saying the commissioner is bound by the arbitrator's decision. Where is that in the statute or in the regulations that the commissioner is bound by the arbitrator's decision?
Well, I think that the principle that we are presenting to the court is the issue of inconsistent, and Your Honor, I agree. It doesn't specifically say it in the statute.
But that is basically your argument.
Our argument.
The commissioner is bound by the arbitrator's decision and cannot later revoke or suspend a teaching certificate unless there are different facts or additional facts justifying it.
That is correct, Your Honor. And the issue again is to have two inconsistent, contradictory decisions that are emanating from the jurisdiction of one agency based on the same facts.
The board says, given the fact that the arbitration almost always will occur first, the board is denied the ability to adjudicate these issues. What's your response to that?
I think that our legislature has appointed these arbitrators as statutory decision makers. I think that the risk of having an inconsistent, unreliable and unpredictable administrative system within the Department of Education is greater than the risk that a highly credentialed arbitrator might make the wrong call.
But a highly credentialed arbitrator cannot address the teaching certificate. Is that fair to say?
They do not have power over the certificate, but Your Honor, if an arbitrator has made a decision that conduct is not bad enough to warrant termination, we would submit that as a matter of law, it can't be bad enough to warrant delicensure.
You've effectively taken delicensure off the table when the facts are the same then.
I would submit the answer is yes, Your Honor.
And even any kind of license suspension, you've also taken off the table because you've said that a license suspension automatically leads to losing tenure. So even a license suspension for one month, 2 months, 3 months, you've said off the table. State Board of Examiners can do anything because that would mean that the person would have to be detenured.
Based upon the decision issued by the arbitrator, the answer would be yes. Again, the examiners can undertake whatever investigation or prosecution they deem fit to develop their own proofs and to impose a penalty based on those proofs.
Can't the Department of Education, can't the commissioner initiate proceedings with regard to teaching certificates, even if there's never been tenure proceedings against that teacher?
Of course, Your Honor. The State Board of Examiners routinely issues orders to show cause against teachers who have never had a tenure case.
But again, you're arguing if there is a tenure case, the commissioner is absolutely bound by what happens in that tenure case, even though that is not stated anywhere in the statute or the regulations.
I believe that's broader than my argument, Your Honor. All we are saying is that we cannot have inconsistent what we submit as a final agency decision.
So we have a tenure arbitration process, and then we have a process with respect to teacher certification. Is there a way to harmonize those two processes without wiping one off on the same facts?
Your Honor, I would not argue that they are in disharmony. And as a practical matter, I think that the way these cases typically play out would indicate that they are not in disharmony. And just as a historical note, before the arbitrators made these decisions, when the commissioner made the decision in a tenure case, when the State Board of Education made the decision in a tenure case, the State Board of, and the teacher kept their job, the State Board of Examiners never did this because they respected the fact that the commissioner, as the final decision maker in the tenure case, had made the call. So there was no difference or problem with how this worked until our legislature gave arbitrators the authority to make decisions in tenure cases.
It seems to me that the decision of the appellate division in Morrison versus Willingboro Board of Education, published appellate division decision in 2024, dealt directly with distinguishing between these two statutory schemes. Are you asking us to overrule that published opinion?
Your Honor, I think that with respect to it, the holding in Morrison is distinguishable. I think with respect to that case's analysis of the differences in these processes, that Morrison was inartful or incorrect. The procedure, and you know, this court did not grant certification in Morrison. You've granted it here. There must be a difference. The difference is that
we're
in
not
Morrison,
bound by the holding in Morrison, even if we didn't grant certification, correct? Because it's a decision of the appellate division.
Of course, Your Honor. In Morrison, the teacher went to the law division and sought an injunction saying the examiners can't even prosecute me because there's been this final agency decision. They're stopped from doing anything. And that is absolutely not our argument. If the examiners want to go in, again, develop their own record, prove additional material facts, they have every right to do that. They can try a better case than the Board of Education. And you know, certainly they have every authority to do that. We are not here making an argument to the court simply about teacher standards. It is about the integrity of an administrative system and how an administrative system cannot have integrity while tolerating different results in this way. That's the critical issue here.
So the best the board could have done in this case is what the arbitrator did: suspend the teacher, suspend the certificate for 3 months.
Your Honor, I disagree that they could have imposed a suspension on his certificate. And the reason for that is because by operation of law, if you do not hold a certificate, you are ineligible to maintain a tenured teaching position. The law prohibits a Board of Education from having in its employ a decertificated teacher. So our position would be that if the arbitrator acting on behalf of the Department of Ed has found that a teacher didn't do something bad enough to get fired, the law compels the result that they didn't do something bad enough for their license to be suspended.
So the board couldn't suspend the certificate at all in this case?
Not based upon the record and decision of the arbitrator.
So the only scenario in which you're arguing the commissioner can suspend or revoke a teaching certificate is if a teacher is fired. Is fired by the arbitrator.
There does not have to be a tenure case for the State Board of Examiners to go after a teacher.
Right, we've covered that.
Okay. If there is a tenure case and the tenure case does not result in termination, it is our position that the examiners cannot impose a suspension based upon the same record. That is the only very limited holding that we would seek from this court.
But then would your argument be, well, there wasn't even a tenured case. The school board did not even bring a tenured case and, you know, was fine with this teacher continuing to be employed by the school. So the State Board of Examiners should not be able to revoke someone's teaching certificate. Seems like that would be the natural progression of your argument if that were the case, that there's no tenure, that the school board doesn't initiate a tenure proceeding at all, and the State Board of Examiners then revokes or suspends teaching certificates.
Absolutely not, Your Honor. Again, the only issue we are presenting to this court is one administrative agency, two final decisions, incompatible results based on one record.
So a final agency action. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
A final agency action can be reviewed by the appellate division for arbitrary and capriciousness. Whereas in this case, what you call the final agency action is made by an arbitrator. And there is no review in the appellate division at all of the decision of an arbitrator. And in superior court, in order to get an arbitration thrown out, there are four very specific requirements, none of which apply to tenure cases specifically, and in general apply only to getting an arbitration confirmed or thrown out. And it can only be vacated where the award was procured by corruption, fraud, or undue means, where there was evidence of partiality or corruption in the arbitrators, where the arbitrator is so significantly exceeded their powers that a definite award upon the subject was not made. How is that in any way similar to a final agency action?
Sure. Your Honor, because these are public sector arbitration awards, they are subject to much broader judicial oversight than private sector arbitration awards.
Where do you see that in the statute? So the only thing that I saw in the statute was it specifically says, instead, quote, it shall be subject to judicial review and enforcement as provided pursuant to NJSA 2A 24-7 through 24-10. And then when you go look at those provisions, in 24-8 is when it specifically is talking about review of arbitration awards. And it sets forth, as I just read, A, B, C, and D, four subsections, none of which say anything about significantly broader review.
Sure. Your Honor, there is a large body of case law devoted to judicial review of public sector arbitration awards. I can't cite the cases chapter and verse, but our courts have consistently held that they do have broader oversight. Arbitrators, for example, in private sector cases are required to follow the law. And it is the this court's decision in the Siri Pompa matter, which is a 2015, I believe, case. It may be cited in our papers, outlined those standards in some detail. There are other decisions as well, but this is reviewed under a broader standard than a private sector arbitration. I have argued a number of these before superior courts myself. I have seen the trial courts throw them out because they believe an arbitrator did not follow the law. And so we do have a robust judicial review process that absolutely ensures the integrity of the awards that are being issued in these cases.
And you think that applies even though the statute doesn't say anything about any more robust review? It just points to this one specific statute, which sets forth a very limited standard of review.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I do believe that the broader review of public sector arbitration award standard does apply to a TCHNJ case versus the more limited private standard of review of a private arbitration.
Counsel, I'd like to get a sense of the scope of authority of the arbitrator under the TEACH Act for unbecoming conduct. So in Morrison, the court says, as we've explained, the commissioner simply assesses before any hearings are held whether charges appear to be sufficient on their face to be tried before an arbitrator. And in this case, the arbitrator says in his decision, the only real question before me is whether dismissal is the appropriate penalty under the circumstances. Is the arbitrator's scope of authority under the TEACH Act to make a substantive determination about unbecoming conduct, or is it to only determine whether the penalty is appropriate? And if it's the former, then what party? Is it the commissioner then that is responsible for making sort of the final substantive determination as to unbecoming conduct?
If I understand your question, Your Honor, the answer would be no. Ultimately, the cases referred—
I don't even understand my question well enough to know what you're answering no to. So,
when the arbitrator gets a TCHNJ case, the question, and it's the question established by the THEL statute 18A 6-10, a teacher can be removed for conduct unbecoming, inefficiency, incapacity, or other just cause.
But is the arbitrator making that conduct unbecoming decision like the court seems to say in Morrison, or is the arbitrator simply determining penalty, like the arbitrator seems to be saying in this case.
Understood. So, Your Honor, in this case regarding Mr. Salento, there were not a lot of facts in dispute at the hearing. Really, the question was whether or not Mr. Salento had recovered, whether he was able to return. There wasn't a big question about what happened in the, at school. But normally, when an arbitrator is hearing these cases, it is a trial type proceeding. They are making findings of fact, which include, what happened. They are also reaching conclusions of law. So it's what happened. Has the Board of Education proven conduct unbecoming? If so, what is the appropriate penalty? It functions the same way that a case would have functioned under the old system if we were in the Office of Administrative Law.
So it's your answer then that the arbitrator is responsible for the unbecoming conduct decision that then would be judicially reviewed.
That is correct, Your Honor.
That's limited to the school district for the teacher. The arbitrator's determination cannot prevent that individual from seeking employment as a teacher somewhere else. That's where the board comes in.
That is correct, Your Honor. I would say as a practical matter, if you have someone who has been removed from tenure, it's going to be tough to get a job somewhere else. But then if you are removed, if it's that bad, there's no problem with the examiners taking action based on that. All we're saying is not bad enough to get fired, not bad enough to lose your license.
Counsel, given your position on the distinction that you drew earlier to a question from Justice Fischelli about the limitations on the Board of Examiners' ability to suspend the certificates, what is your best position, your strongest position of where in the statute either the Board of Examiners or an arbitrator could look to determine what those limitations are?
You're referring, Your Honor, to what limits the State Board of Examiners under our
if reviewing the statute, where could they see some indication that they have to make a different choice with regard to what seems to be their decision to either revoke, suspend, or dismiss the order to show cause?
Sure. I Your Honor, it's a novel issue, and I would submit that that is the reason why we're here.
So in our opinion, where are we drawing that authority from?
I think the court draws the authority fundamentally from the fact that we have certain principles. We have principles of due process, being guarded against arbitrary action, fundamental fairness, being guarded against arbitrarily applied governmental procedure, and preclusive principles in the form of agency comity, the idea that government is bound by the actions of government. Our appeal is not a strict statutory analysis saying, it's in 18A 6-17.1 E2. It is saying to the court, fundamentally, we can't have an administrative agency that is acting at cross purposes. And that's why we cite to Wolf v. McDonald, Doe v. Poritz. It's why we have referenced prior decisions of this court where the court has emphasized the importance of applying comity to our administrative proceedings because it's essential to having a consistent process and a process that maintains integrity.
So are you suggesting that the statutory frameworks, parallel statutory frameworks here, as interpreted by the board, violate due process and you want them struck down in some way or interpreted in a way that avoids a constitutional issue?
Certainly. Your Honor, we don't believe that either process needs to be struck down. We're simply saying that where you have this unusual situation of the agency issuing two conflicting decisions, that two such conflicting decisions violate due process and violate fundamental fairness because of the fact that it is an arbitrary government procedure at that point.
But as if the two proceedings ended up with different decisions and there was no constitutional issue for this court to address, what would be the court's authority to somehow change that result? See what I'm saying? That it's the legislature's in charge of policy here.
I Understood, Your Honor. I think the court has the authority to say that in the unusual situation where an agency reaches two conflicting decisions in this way, that that act is a violation of due process, a violation of fundamental fairness, a violation of agency comity, and that it can't be permitted to happen. I would respectfully submit it's an absurd result. It's analogous to our appellate courts, you know, one panel issuing a decision and another panel issuing a decision in the same case, but with the opposite result. It would never happen.
If we disagreed with you about your agency comparison and conclude that the matter before the arbitrator is not an agency final determination, how does that impact your argument?
I think the court could and should still rule in our favor, again, because of the fact that fundamentally the arbitration award in these cases is a government action. It is compelled by statute. The arbitrator is appointed by the Commissioner of Education. They have the authority to issue subpoenas. They have the authority to issue orders as the statutory decision maker for the Department of Education. So even if the court were to say that it's not an agency decision, it is still a governmental decision. And as such, there cannot be conflict between two governmental decisions, whether they're, you know, the same agency or different agencies based on the same record.
So go ahead, Chief. You're not saying then that the arbitrator is an agent of the Department of Education, are you?
I am, Your Honor.
So in that sense, are you saying that the arbitrator has a fiduciary duty to the Department of Education?
I believe the answer is yes. They have a duty to determine whether a teacher who is brought up before them is fit to remain in a classroom. And they do that by finding whether or not conduct unbecoming occurred, and then determining whether that conduct unbecoming requires the penalty of termination or something else. And that's exactly what happened here. After hearing from Mr. Salento over 2 days of a tenure hearing, the arbitrator found this is someone who made a mistake. He's a highly effective special education teacher. We don't throw him out. And so the arbitrator, in making that decision, yes, has a statutory duty on behalf of the Department of Education to consider those issues in making their decision.
The arbitrator is there to make fair determination as to whether decisions already having been made by the agency are correct or are not correct, right? As to whether the commissioner's take on unbecoming conduct was correct or not correct.
Your Honor, I disagree with that, and I can explain why. The commissioner, under the statute, the commissioner gets tenure charges and then refers them to arbitrators for disposition. The commissioner performs a very basic screening function there. I would analogize it to a grand jury indictment, but frankly, it's even less than that. So the arbitrator is not reviewing the commissioner's referral of the tenure charges. The arbitrator is hearing de novo the case put on by the school district, the defense offered by the teacher, and then deciding fundamentally, has the district proven conduct unbecoming? If so, what has to happen here? Does this person have to be removed or not?
But doesn't that hurt your case? Because it seems like you keep saying that the arbitrator is making that decision on behalf of the commissioner, but we can't find anything in the statute that indicates that. And instead, the statute makes it seem like the arbitrator is making that decision as between the local Board of Education and the teacher. And the commissioner has no say over that decision. The commissioner has not already made a finding in that case. The commissioner has no power to remove the arbitrator if they disagree with a decision on the merits that the arbitrator made about what evidence can be admitted and what can't. In general, when there is an agency and the agency has an agent, if the agent is acting against the agency's wishes, the agency can remove that agent. But in this circumstance, that's just not the case. And you did point out it's kind of a sui generis statutory creation. But why is it a creation where the arbitrator is working on behalf of the commissioner rather than adjudicating disputes in a way the legislature set forth between a local board of education and an individual teacher.
Okay. I would broaden it slightly by saying that the arbitrator is working on behalf of the Department of Education. The arbitrator is appointed under 18A, the school law. All of the regulations that govern the appointment of the arbitrator are contained within 6A.
But students, for example, go to school because of the school law, but they are not acting on behalf of the Department of Education. That's where I'm having trouble understanding it.
It is.
Just because the school law sets up a procedure does not mean that that is always part of the Department of Education.
I think when we look at the training, the fact that they are selected, they are appointed by the Department of Education, they are given training with respect to the standards they have to apply. Finally, at the direction of the Department of Education, they are issuing decisions on the subject matter, which is the core competency of the agency, which is conduct unbecoming a teacher and the effect that has on the school district. This is unlike, for example, a public employment relations referral to grievance arbitration, where the arbitrator is not addressing any subject matter which falls within the expertise of the agency. Here, the arbitrator is issuing a decision directly on the issue that is the agency's expertise.
I understand, but they're doing so specifically without being controlled by the agency, because that is how the legislature wanted it to operate. So it just seems very odd to say, reading the legislation, understanding what the legislature was trying to get at, that they were taking this out of the commissioner's decision and instead giving it to this arbitrator, we're still going to say this is the commissioner's decision and therefore they cannot make a different decision on the same facts.
I am not arguing that the decision of the arbitrator is the commissioner's decision. I am arguing that it operates as a final agency decision of the Department of Education. And certainly, whether that is a nuance or a hair that's hard to split, it is a governmental decision because the parties have no authority to control who makes the decision. They have no authority over the standards that decision maker must apply. The standards are set by law. The decision maker is appointed by the government. Where the parties have no say in that, certainly the decision of the arbitrator is a governmental decision, and as such, we cannot have inconsistent governmental decisions in a system where due process and fundamental fairness obtain.
And we touched on this earlier. I just want to make sure that I understand your position, and that is that the arbitrator's decision will be the final one for the agency, even though the arbitrator lacks some authority that the commissioner has. For example, the arbitrator can say, you're fired. You may not teach in Township X. The commissioner, on the very same facts and only those facts, would have the authority to sustain the board's decision that person's certification will be taken away and they may not teach anywhere. Unlike the arbitrator's decision, which would allow them to teach in a neighboring town. Notwithstanding that, your position is this is the final decision of the agency, and that in effect means that the authority of the agency is limited only to the maximum of removal of that teacher from the one township. Is that a fair statement?
An arbitrator can remove someone from a position from the township. If that happens, the State Board of Examiners and the commissioner can impose whatever penalty they see fit based upon that record, again, because it was bad enough for the teacher to be fired. If it is not bad enough for the teacher to be fired, we submit that on the record that isn't bad enough for a termination, that same record can't justify a suspension because that effectuates a termination. So it is a very narrow position that we are advocating here. And again, we say nothing, we do nothing that infringes on the independent right of the State Board of Examiners to prosecute and prove its own case.
Perhaps I've misunderstood. Under the example that I gave, could the board teacher is fired in the arbitral process?
Yes.
Could the board then revoke the certification?
Based on that record? Yes, Your Honor.
But not if there were a penalty short of removal in the arbitral process.
Again, based on the same record, no, they could not.
And your basic position there is if it's not bad enough for the teacher to be fired, then that same record can't lead to the teacher being fired.
Yes.
You made that leap because you explained that even if the certificate is only suspended for a short period of time, that still leads to the teacher being fired because you cannot maintain tenure if your certificate is suspended for any period of time.
Yes, Your Honor.
Other questions anyone has? Anything you'd like to add, Counsel?
Absent questions, no, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Weber.
Good morning again. May it please the court. The appellate division's decision should be affirmed because the panel below, the commissioner, and the board of examiners all correctly held that the board has the exclusive authority to take action against an educator's professional certificates and therefore cannot be restricted by or bound to arbitration awards, even if they're based on the same facts.
If you could try to keep your voice up, please.
Oh, I apologize, Chief Justice. The commissioner agrees with the application of Morrison here and the detailed analysis the Morrison panel provided. There are a variety of statutes exposing a fundamental flaw permeating through all of Mr. Salento's and Amici's briefs and arguments today. Namely, the suggestion that arbitrators, the board, and the commissioner are one indistinct single governmental entity and agency head, and that tenure arbitration awards are final agency decisions that somehow stop the board from exercising its statutory authority to issue a penalty on a teacher's certificates. Through the teacher certification law and the tenure employees hearing law, and especially through the TeachNJ amendments, the legislature plainly intended for those processes to operate independently with a focus on different policy goals, and it never intended for the board's authority to suspend or revoke a teacher's certificate to be limited to or circumvented by arbitrators who issue decisions in a local employment context. There are very serious public policy considerations at stake here, which counterbalance any fairness concerns the appellant has raised. In particular, the public, in ensuring that New Jersey's public school students receive a high quality education in a safe learning environment. If this court were to limit the board's ability to take action against the teacher's certificates by restricting penalties to those issued by an arbitrator in the employment context, the board's public mandate to protect all of New Jersey students on a statewide level and from district to district would be undermined. And we know through this court's precedents, for example, in In re Polk and Doe versus Poritz, that any fundamental fairness concerns must be weighed against reasonable regulation in the public interest. And here, there are statutes on the books intentionally setting up a two-track system with no indication whatsoever in the law's plain language that it was intended to operate differently. There is no arbitrary or random or unlegislated system. Rather, the system is carefully designed and has been refined over decades through robust legislation and regulation to ensure that all of New Jersey students receive a safe, high-quality education. And I'd just like to continue by addressing, there was a lengthy colloquy regarding whether these decisions are a final agency decision and whether tenure decisions are issued by the Department of Education. And there are a number of textual reasons why that is not the case. And I just want to run through some of those. So to the plain language of the law completely contradicts what the appellant has argued here. As you know, 18A:6-17.1 is very clear that The arbitrator's determination shall be final and binding and may not be appealable to the commissioner. And you can contrast that with 18A:6-38.4, which is clear with respect to examiner's decisions, those decisions shall be a final agency action under the Administrative Procedures Act, and appeal of that action shall be directly to the appellate division. So if you juxtapose those two statutes, it's very clear on the face of the law that the legislature intended for tenure arbitrations to be issued by arbitrators and not be subject to review directly by the appellate division as an agency decision. And just continuing, TCHNJ's legislative history, to the extent the court was inclined to look at it, was clear. The Senate and Assembly both made statements that the final determination on the case will no longer be made by the Commissioner of Education. And the Commissioner is only tasked with determining whether or not there's a contested case. This court itself in the San Juan matter said that the TCHNJ amendments to the tenure employees hearing law change the entity that makes the final determination in a case. The Administrative Procedure Act, if you look at the definitions there, none of those definitions do any work to explain or define an arbitration award as an agency decision. And to the point that was raised by a few of the justices today, again, Rule 223, the agency decisions are appealed directly under Rule 223A2, but that does not occur here. So I just wanted to touch on those points. I welcome any questions from the court.
Your colleague raises a simple argument that the same facts have led to different outcomes in this situation. In one instance, a 3-month suspension, and the other, 2 years where the individual cannot teach anywhere. And that's because we have two different processes that the briefs lay out for us. Is there a way to harmonize those two processes so that we don't end up with outcomes like this?
I think they are harmonized, Your Honor. I think that's exactly what the legislature intended. It sort of forms as a check and balance function. You have a tenure decision that's issued in the shorter term and addresses a teacher and educator's immediate employment status, but the legislature clearly intended for the examiners to take on a more a further sighted look at a teacher's certificates and ensure that that teacher is held accountable on a statewide basis from district to district. So I think the statutes work in tandem. They work harmoniously as they exist today and as they are carried out.
Your adversary points out, though, that the argument you just made could be made even if the commissioner did have authority over the arbitration like it used to, in that you just said, you know, the arbitration is based only on a local position and the certificate is a broader question, but that before 2002, when the commissioner had some final authority over the tenure decision, the Board of Examiners never attempted to revoke the certificate of someone who had not been removed in tenure proceedings. How do you respond?
I certainly understand the argument. I don't think it bears a tremendous amount of relevance here because we have a new statutory system on the books with the TCHNJ amendments. Clearly, the legislature intended for these matters to be removed to arbitrators. And I think it was mentioned a few times that the arbitrators are highly trained. And that is indeed true. They're highly trained. They're highly specialized. They specialize in labor and employment contexts. That's what the legislature intended for them to do. So if you look on the other side, the Board of Examiners is composed of a great many different types of educators, administrators, academics. They're clearly intended to be looking at something very different. So while in the older statutory regimes, you may have had a little bit more consistency in the decisions, I don't think that's tremendously relevant because of the changes. And you know, looking at the different types of expertise that is required to decide tenure matters and decide examiners matters, I think the legislature intended that there may not be similar outcomes.
Are you saying there's no final agency decision from a tenure perspective?
Correct, Your Honor. Those decisions, our position is that they are not final agency decisions. They're reviewed under the Arbitration Act, which is then appealed to the appellate division after the Superior Court reviews them. They don't have any of the characteristics of a agency decision.
Why can't the legislature by statute say, look, we're going to make the process a little bit different before it goes to the APTIV, so it doesn't go to the APTIV on the first instance. It goes to the Superior Court on the first instance. We're going to develop a process that gives the Department of Education significant authority with regard to these arbitrators, and those arbitrators will then make a decision that we'll consider to be a decision on behalf of the Department of Education. Why can't the legislature do that?
Well, I think under your hypothetical, Your Honor, if the legislature had done that, you might be running into an abrogation issue, which I am not an expert in, but I don't think that's what's happening here. There is nothing in any of the TEACH-NJ amendments to suggest that that's what the legislature intended. There's no language in the statute at all indicating that they intended for this to be an agency action. And again, one example is 18A6-17.1E that made it very clear that it's intended to be a final determination that's binding as to those parties and then reviewable in the Superior Court. But they don't say anything. The legislature said nothing about this being an agency action of any kind.
Questions?
Just one follow-up to that. The legislature sometimes says this decision shall constitute a final agency determination. Am I right about that in other statutes?
Correct. That's in other statutes. And again, with respect to the examiners, the teacher certification law 38.4 clearly says the Board of Examiners matters shall be appealable. I can pull the language. Any appeal of a determination of the Board of Examiners shall be to the commissioner, whose determination shall be a final agency action under the Administrative Procedures Act. So that's a very clear example of where the legislature did intend for something to be a final agency action.
Do you happen to know if they always say that in cases in which the AG interprets the statute to provide for that, or is that a sometimes but not always type of language?
I'm trying to recall if, for example, the School Ethics Commission law has a similar language. I don't recall, but the Controversies and Disputes statute, I believe, has similar language where a final decision is issued by the commissioner and then appealed to the appellate division.
And certainly the APA in general provides that, but that doesn't necessarily resolve the question whether a particular type of decision is a final agency action.
Very true, but again, if you look at the definitions in the APA, they do lend support to the idea that none of the definitions in the APA, the way administrative adjudication is described, the contested cases, heads of agencies, all of those decisions are very specific and they do not encompass arbitration.
Counsel, do you happen to know how common this type of circumstance is?
Your Honor, you're referring to a contrast between tenure arbitrations and or arbitrations in general. I think the tenure system is unique in New Jersey, to be sure. I'm not aware of a similar situation to the tenure matters. I mean, of course, you have situations where an employee, a civil service employee, might be subject to civil service discipline and also be subject to license revocation. A lot of arbitrations do go the private route through collective negotiations, but I'm not aware of a similar system where you have a statutory regime like the tenure laws operating in tandem with license certification.
Could you briefly address the fundamental fairness argument? You've laid out your view of the structure. Assume that's correct.
Yes, Your Honor. So again, fundamental fairness, due process, they often work hand in hand. And this court has said repeatedly, with respect to substantive due process, there has to be egregious governmental abuse. With respect to fundamental fairness, there has to be arbitrary or unjust government action. But that is not what's occurring here. Again, there are very heavily legislated systems in place, and they're also regulated, and they're overseen by the Board of Examiners and arbitrators. So the court's analysis has suggested that there must be any fairness issue must be balanced against reasonable regulation in the public interest. We have that here. There are regulations on the books. There are statutes on the books. There are serious public concerns that are being protected by those regulations and statutes. Again, the board is charged with ensuring that students receive a safe, a high quality education in a safe learning environment. That's what these statutes are intended to protect. They're intended to protect the students by ensuring that teachers are held accountable on a local level through the tenure process and in the labor context, and on a statewide basis to ensure that all of New Jersey students are protected from district to district.
Other questions, anyone? Anything you'd like to add, counsel?
No, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Critch. Did you want to offer a brief rebuttal?
Thank you again. May it please the court. A few points. There's been some talk today about legislative intent. What did the legislature anticipate here? And I would submit that the legislature did not and never could have anticipated that arbitral awards maintaining teachers in their positions would be summarily overturned by the examiners. And the reason they didn't anticipate that, again, is because it never happened before when the commissioner was making these decisions. Regarding the nature of the arbitral award as an administrative decision, it's clear in 18A6-9 that a tenure case is a controversy or dispute arising under the school law, the same as it has always been. The only difference that the legislature made is it changed the decision maker. And so in every aspect, it is still an agency decision and certainly a governmental decision. Finally, regarding the issue raised by my colleague of the specialization of the arbitrators, I would submit that not only are the arbitrators trained to be specialists in the school law, but the quality of the decisions that they issue, that training is manifest. And I would invite the court to compare the analysis and the attention to detail which was taken in Arbitrator Deinhardt's award to the order of suspension that was issued by the examiners. Absent further questions, I'll submit.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel for the helpful arguments. We'll take the matter under advisement.